You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming. I think we're going to get started pretty quickly here. I think everyone's pretty much in the room. It's been a busy day. I'm sure you guys are also following that the Comcast NBC votes are out, and FCC and DOJ are quite busy, and so they're keeping a lot of the other reporters busy, I think. So we think that's a good thing, though, because that means these guys can speak a little bit more freely, knowing that there's only one reporter in the room, being me. So please feel free to – oh, sorry, and Lynn's right there, too. Didn't see her. So we have an hour, and I've been asked to remind everyone that the only thing standing between us and the cocktail hour is pretty much us up here on the stage. So I will try to get you out of here as promptly at 4:30 as possible, so you can continue the conversations over a cocktail. And Neil has to leave at 4, so we're going to let him make sure that he gets some time with the microphone before as well. I thought what would be easiest if we could, everyone could just go down the line and just introduce yourself briefly, what your role is on the Hill, and then we can jump right into questions. Neil?
I'm Neil Fried. I'll be advising Chairman Upton and Chairman Walden on communications and technology issues in the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
I'm Brian Hendricks. I'm the general counsel to the Republican side of the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee.
I'm Roger Sherman. I'm the Democratic chief counsel for communications and technology, advising Chairman Waxman and a ranking member to be determined.
I'm John Branscombe. I'm communications counsel to Senator Rockefeller on the Commerce Committee.
Great. And so we have a lot going on broadband. The topic of this panel is looking at what legislative action, if any, or if there will be some, but where they will, how far they will go and where they will come from is yet to be seen. We have everything from net neutrality to spectrum allocation, universal service reform, a possible telecom rewrite, some possible oversight, additional oversight of the broadband stimulus funds. So there's a lot on the plate of these guys, and that's only part of their jobs as they look at the entire telecom ecosystem as well. So, Neil, I wanted to start with you, and maybe you could give us a sense of where the committee stands right now. I know you're doing a lot of juggling still and getting people just settled in their offices, but maybe give us a sense of where we stand and when we might start to see action on any of the above things that I just mentioned.
Sure. We are still organizing. In fact, Thursday will be the formal organization of the committee. I don't think it'll be any surprise that the first technology issue that we'll confront is likely net neutrality. You know, probably not the first issue the full committee looks at. My guess is health will come first, but maybe towards the middle of February we'll turn to that. There's still substantial concern among the Republican members. As you look through the net neutrality order, it really, from our reading, is really kind of full of doublespeak. It's sort of, in order to keep the Internet open, we have to regulate it. In order to make sure that no entrepreneur needs permission to innovate, everyone's going to need the government's permission to innovate, and as few as three commissioners will be deciding what is reasonable when it comes to the Internet space. And that's just still very troubling. We had asked for hearings for the past couple of years and never really had one on the proposal. It was adopted very late, just before the holidays. And if you look at the broader just theory of authority, it just appears completely untethered. The very same theories that are espoused in the document could be used to justify almost anything. In fact, if you look at anything that was mentioned, even cursorily, in the broadband plan, the theory here is that if it's something necessary or helpful in the remotest possible way to promoting broadband, then the FCC would have authority. So just one example would be the broadband plan talks about privacy being one of the main hindrances of deployment of broadband. Whether or not you believe that to be true, if the FCC says it, under the theory that it's espoused, it could now regulate privacy when it comes to any interstate communication by wire or radio. So completely apart from the substance of net neutrality, I think everyone needs to be very concerned that this theory of authority almost makes Congress moot. The FCC would have authority to do almost anything on close to a whim. So we will likely start with early consideration of a resolution of disapproval under the Congressional Review Act. And a resolution of disapproval allows Congress to nullify any agency regulation with a simple majority in both chambers. It's filibuster-proof. There is a procedural window in which it needs to be done. It's interesting. Most legislation would say you need to do something by. This particular legislation says you need to do something within a particular time period. So once the net neutrality rules are officially transmitted, well, not even transmitted, but actually received is the language by Congress, a 60-day clock starts, and that clock tolls any time Congress is in recess. But during that 60-day window, remember, it's not exactly 60 calendar days, but during that 60-day window, if a resolution is approved, the rule and signed by the president, the rules would be nullified. It's got to go like any other piece of legislation through both chambers. Conventional wisdom is that it should be fairly likely in the House. And even in the Senate, if you remember, there's already 47 Republicans, so it won't take many more Democrats to side with those Republicans to possibly get that through the Senate. But obviously I'll leave that prognostication to my Senate counterpart. But that's likely where we'll start. I think the next sort of issue that we'll focus on broadband will be spectrum issues. There was and there continues to be, I think, bipartisan support for improved spectrum management to get more spectrum out for wireless broadband. It will actually be very helpful for broadband policy in and of itself, but it also could potentially raise considerable money for the federal treasury, which is certainly needed right about now. So the hope is that we have bipartisan legislation looking at a variety of options, everything from the AWS spectrum to incentive auctions to the D block and possible government relocation, to make government more efficient. All of those things will be discussed, but those are probably the two primary issues.
Okay. And just since I know you need to go, I'll talk a little bit more to you and then we'll move on. But do you see any chance for a rewrite of the Telecom Act? Does that even begin to enter your radar at this point, since companies like Verizon, since you're on the topic of net neutrality, are still pushing for some sort of change on the legislation itself to make sure that there is certainty going forward? Is there a possibility for that?
So the approach last Congress, and I think we'll continuing approach for the Republican members at least, is that we prefer to identify a problem and address a specific problem. It's actually one of our concerns with the net neutrality proceeding, is that no one's really demonstrated a concrete problem to address. So, you know, broad rewrites, I think, are very challenging. They've been tried before. They don't always go as smoothly as they might otherwise. So my hunch will be we will look for specific identified issues and probably focus on more narrowed legislation to address those issues.
Okay. And, Roger, do you have any response to what Neil just said? I know that you guys had a similar conversation at CES, so some of you have already heard some of these points. But, you know, where do you see, also a question you might be able to address, if this order does end up getting challenged in court by a company in the next, who knows, it could be very soon to somewhere in the next 6 months, does that change how Congress should approach this? And we can come back to you, Neil, after Roger kind of responds.
Well, I think the first thing in responding to Neil, I think we would just say our views are just the opposite on pretty much everything he identified. So most of the folks in this room have heard a lot of our concerns, but where the Republicans think that this is doublespeak, and I know Neil made a famous allusion to 1984 out in Las Vegas, I'm going to go to Shakespeare and say it's much ado about nothing. We just don't see this as a huge problem. We see this as a balanced order that takes into consideration the concerns of stakeholders, and that includes industry and public interest groups. The interesting thing is you have industry groups who are opposed, but not that many, just a couple, and you have public interest groups that are wildly opposed as well. Some people say that suggests the FCC may have hit the sweet spot. I'm not sure if that's the case, but Chairman Waxman or Mr. Waxman views this as a floor, not a ceiling. He wasn't satisfied with a couple of the pieces, but understood that to move the ball forward on this issue and put it behind us so we can focus on other issues, we needed to make progress, and he considers it a huge step forward. Mm-hmm. So we have a very different view than Neil espoused. The Congressional Review Act, Neil portrays it accurately. It's going to, if the Republicans would like to move it through the House, I'm pretty confident we'll sail through. I think Democrats will try to point out that we disagree with the rationale for doing it. We also would point out this is a little bit of an exercise in speech making and rhetorical points, because we know at the end of the day, and I wouldn't speak for the White House, but I think most people are fairly confident that the president is going to veto this. So what we would say is, let's agree to disagree. Let's see what happens in court. Let's move on to things that actually create jobs and spur innovation, and that's spectrum. And so when Neil and his colleagues and the Republican majority want to move to spectrum, we will be waiting anxiously, because we agree that that is something we can do bipartisan together and shouldn't be wasting months arguing about net neutrality. Net neutrality is where it is, and Congress is very unlikely to overturn it through a review act. So let's get going on spectrum. And if you want to throw in universal service reform or public safety, solving the interoperability problem, mm-hmm. We're game to work together on all those issues.
Okay. And so if there is a challenge in court and this ends up going back to the federal court, does that, from the Republican point of view, does that mean that, okay, well, some of our concerns over authority in particular will be addressed by the court, and maybe that means that we can not go forward, not have to move so quickly on a resolution of disapproval or other efforts?
A court process will take longer than the 60-day window we would have uh-huh. to use the Congressional Review Act. So we will be moving forward with a Congressional Review Act approach just because we have that limited window. I take Roger's points about net neutrality, but there really is a much broader discussion here, which is the FCC's use and, we would say, abuse of its authority and process. And so while we certainly do intend to move forward with spectrum legislation, we need to talk about how the agency functions properly, because right now we're just not comfortable with what we've been seeing, delegating a lot more authority to the FCC on any issue unless we feel it's on sounder ground.
Okay. Why don't we get some Senate perspective in here? Guys, do either of you want to kind of get us started on where you see the Senate falling on, particularly the net neutrality? Neil said that he thought that with the 47 Republicans, that's what you said, right, 47, that there wasn't much farther to go to get a few more Democrats on board. Where do you guys stand? Either
Well, I probably couldn't add much to what Senator Hutchison has already said very publicly mm-hmm. about her views on net neutrality. She agrees entirely with the position that is being espoused by my colleague on the House side, that the commission, in doing what it has done, has showed very little fidelity to its authorizing statute. And I think that is what causes her the most concern, is that not given to alarm. For those who haven't read the order, I have a copy here. It actually is fairly breathtaking what the commission has proposed to do. The first 20 pages of this order are all about the pretext for why we need to act. There's a lot of could, should, may, might, very little actual harm that is demonstrated. In fact, after 100,000 comments and 5 years of debate, we have three paragraphs in the order that articulate the actual instances in which the commission believes there has been some activity of concern. And even there, it qualifies its comment by saying, we don't actually even suggest that these are violations of the open internet principles, but we're going to cite them anyway. And so I think when she looks at that, she views that as a complete abuse of discretion under the statute. The authority to regulate the network management activities of broadband providers is simply not in the act. And so we will start where Neil suggested. On the Senate side, we will also introduce a resolution of disapproval, time to work with the House in the appropriate window. We're fairly confident we will have the requisite number of members to discharge it from the committee and to move directly to the floor for consideration. So there's not a lot to say about the contents of the order that haven't already been said by our members. I mean, from her perspective, this is truly a separation of powers issue, where you clearly have an agency that has gone beyond, in her view, the restraints imposed upon it by its authorizing statute. That has meaning, and it has a consequence. And that is the tone of the discussion that I think you will probably see in the Senate, is forget what you think you know or thought you knew about net neutrality. The question is, do you want an agency by regulatory fiat to determine what is the appropriate policy framework to govern one-sixth of the American economy? She feels no. Is the answer to that question. So we'll start there.
Okay. John?
So Chairman Rockefeller supported the FCC's action. Much of what I agree with what Roger said, not surprisingly. I think, you know, in terms of the Congressional Review Act, I guess I would say that, you know, we could spend our time on this, and apparently we're going to be spending our time on this, but it just doesn't matter because we know that the president will veto this, and the Senate's not going to override that veto. And we could use all these next couple of weeks talking about this, or we could focus on things like spectrum, universal service reform, and most importantly to probably Chairman Rockefeller, public safety, and making sure that we actually, almost 10 years from 9/11, finally go forward with getting a nationwide interoperable wireless broadband network for public safety and first responders.
Okay. So do you agree that it would be difficult, Neil, for any kind of resolution disapproval to make it to the president's desk and actually get signed?
I think the odds are good that it will get to the president's desk. Again, as Roger said, you know, we can't speak for the president, but it's not really great politics. I mean, there were 95 members this election cycle that took a pledge to support net neutrality. All 95 lost. This is really not we think it's poor policy, but even as a matter of politics, right, it's not clear that the president wants this to be a national issue going into 2012 with lots of Senate seats and the presidency, you know, an issue of questions for 2012.
Okay. Why don't we? Yeah, of course.
Let me just add one point to that because we have no idea what the administration may do with respect to a resolution that is sent to them. But I have to take issue with the notion that somehow we shouldn't have the discussion. You know, the issue here is some of our members feel rather strongly that this has been a political movement, not a regulatory action driven by a market failure. They think it's important to highlight that. They think it is important to talk about what is the appropriate policy framework for regulating broadband in the country, given that we are moving from a situation where we had a light touch, regulatory minimalist approach to something where the commission has claimed and reserved for itself authorities that are really almost boundless, as Neil points out, under its interpretation of the act. That's just not a conversation that our members are going to walk away from without having plenty to say on it. It's the notion that somehow the president is going to veto it, we shouldn't have the conversation, is just really silly.
Okay.
Sure,
of course.
I think there's a fundamental disagreement here. The other side of this issue argues often that there's, you know, a solution in search of a problem. I think, you know, there's a fundamental difference in how we view the role of government. From Mr. Waxman's perspective, smart regulation doesn't mean you wait for something to blow up before you try to address potential problems. You look at things and you look at potential problems and incentives and where the market is headed, and you put in place regulations, and hopefully smart regulations with a light touch, that incent actors to behave in a certain way so the problems never emerge. We've seen time and time again crises across the political spectrum in banking and energy and other areas that are, you know, we're left reacting and having knee-jerk responses to crises. The FCC's order is a exercise in regulatory humility, you know, that no other than AT&T and the cable industry, and I think probably Comcast, once we look at the order, seem quite comfortable with. They've said, this is a balancing of interests. We can live with this. We can follow these rules. And let's dig a little bit just quickly deeper. Everyone agrees that the Internet principles can be dealt with. Everyone says they've been abiding by the Internet principles. Everybody agrees that transparency is a no-brainer, that transparency requirements make good sense for consumers and are not that onerous. What we come down to is non-discrimination and how that's interpreted. But the non-discrimination standard the FCC adopted is flexible, and it's based on 202, and it's based on reasonable network management. So there really is a lot of flexibility and given to industry to manage this and to address these concerns. So, again, we just think it's an exercise in smart regulation, and that's better to do that up front than to wait until things blow up.
Okay. Anyone else have anything on net neutrality before we move on to many of the other issues that we need to talk? Okay. Why don't we move on to spectrum, since that is something that is probably also seems to be pretty high on the list of things to do pretty quickly once we get all settled on the Hill. Neil, where do things stand from your position right now? Where do you see things standing there? I know the FCC is already going forward with making a lot of preparations to do some sort of incentive spectrum auction, but of course it needs congressional approval to do that. Where do we stand on that?
Well, I think we're going to pick up where the conversation left off. As I think, and Roger, I think, agreed, there was bipartisan interest in this issue. So we've had a number of hearings. There may be more as we discuss what legislation should look like to authorize the FCC to put more spectrum into the marketplace. Like, again, because we are authorizing the FCC to do something, we are very concerned about how the FCC will use that discretion. So you'll see, a constant thread through the year of what is the proper role for the agency, and then how do we get those resources deployed to help promote broadband.
Okay. Anyone else wanted
to?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say Senator Rockefeller last year introduced the Public Safety and Wireless Innovation Act. It not only focuses on the public safety aspects and providing additional spectrum and resources to build out this nationwide broadband network for public safety, but it also is a comprehensive spectrum bill in that it extends the FCC auction authority. It provides incentive auction authority to the FCC and directs the auction of some spectrum that's currently held by the federal government for commercial uses. I think Senator Rockefeller is going to be reintroducing that early in this Congress, really hoping to build momentum on that, and we look forward to working with Senator Hutchison and others on that.
Senator Hutchison actually is some news to make, I guess, here. She has decided that she would like to prioritize moving a comprehensive spectrum bill. It's something that staff is currently working on with the number of stakeholders that we anticipate will introduce in the next weeks, maybe month or so. But really to move the discussion beyond just the issues that we've talked about that are extremely important in the way of conducting inventories, in the way of how does one dispose of the D block. And as John mentioned, the issue of incentive auctions is one that has received a great deal of attention. In our view, probably too much attention. We think there's great promise in that issue, but there has been too much fixation on broadcaster spectrum. There are many other opportunities in spectrum to do things in government bands, in the upper bands. 5 gigahertz, for example, may have some opportunities for indoor use that can be accommodated. A lot of unlicensed use, some work that we might do to drive research into cognitive radio that will be really important things to get on the table as part of the discussion. I think the good news here is that this is a very bipartisan issue, and I think from our perspective, when we've done big things on communications and technology policy, there has tended to be a budget deficit reduction driver. Clearly that is the case with spectrum. We think that makes it ripe for consideration. Job creation, it certainly fits those themes. So I think there's a very good chance that there will be a number of bill introductions, and then hopefully in the Senate that at least there will be some markups where we can put some of these pieces together and maybe move a comprehensive piece of wireless legislation. But that is clearly something she's prioritized.
Okay, great. Roger, do you have anything to add on?
I don't have much to add. I agree with everything that's been said. I know for one that Democratic staff is looking forward to working on an issue. We had a number of bipartisan accomplishments last year. Net neutrality has sort of distracted us from some of our bipartisan work. It'll be great to work on an issue that is truly bipartisan. I do think we're going to need to address the D block. There are a lot of different views on both sides of the aisle about how to dispense and dispose of the D block, and we're going to have to figure out some path forward in order to move other spectrum items forward. So I think that's something we're going to need to look at early on and try to reconcile between the House and Senate views. And within the House, there are different views, and within the Senate, there are different views. So,
do you think that with the D block, this is something that, of course, has been talked about ever since, for the past 10 years, and with the 10th anniversary of 9/11 coming up this year, what is the likelihood of getting something done here on a national public safety network? Do you think that something could be accomplished before September? Legislatively, anyone?
I think yes. I think there's motivation on all sides to do so. On the short list of things we need to get done, that's probably toward the top.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, it remains one of Chairman Rockefeller's priorities, Chairman Lieberman, Chairman King in the House. This is a very important issue, and we really need to get this done and done quickly.
And I know that you only have like 3 minutes left, so I'll ask one question that's a little bit off course, and then we'll veer back. But on online privacy, where do you see that going this year? Is that a priority? Clearly, you have a lot more on your plate, but it's a hot topic.
I don't see the issue going away. There seems to be a general consensus that the status quo is not acceptable, but in a very unique way, we have sort of bipartisan non-consensus. Everyone agrees that they don't like what exists, but they don't agree on what should be there instead. There's sort of three broad groups, just to oversimplify. There's the self-regulation group, there's the opt-out group, and the opt-in group. And this is the members on both sides of the aisle, and they all fit in different categories. And they all have a particular view as to what the right result is, but whatever they think the right result is, they think everybody should be living under that regime. And right now, depending on what sector of the industry you're in, you're under one, another, or sometimes more than one of those regimes. And so whether you want self-regulation or opt-in, you think everyone should live under that world. So ironically, everybody probably thinks we need legislation to make sure everybody's under the same regime. So we don't have an answer yet, but I don't think the issue is going to go away.
Do you think that everyone needs to live under the same regime, or that there needs to be...
Anytime you have different regimes applying to similar actors, the more convergence we see, the more difficult it gets. It actually, you end up having regulations put a thumb on the scale. And to the extent to which you can minimize it, that's always a good thing. I don't know if it's ever possible to completely eliminate it, but we certainly are concerned that it's having an impact on the way the economy grows.
Okay, great. And I know you need to go, so we'll let you slip out, and we will continue without you, sadly. Thanks for coming. All right. And so I guess we can stay on the privacy topic real quick, since Neil just teed it up. Is there a difference of opinion from the Democrat side of the aisle, Roger?
I think I agree with a lot of what Neil said on the politics. We had a number of members last Congress very interested in this. Mr. Boucher, former Chairman Boucher, and Mr. Stearns had a discussion draft that was circulated and got a lot of comment. Mr. Rush had actually a bill introduced that had a lot of discussion. So I think there's a lot of interest on both sides of the aisle, and I think with the administration's interest in this as well, I think we'll see some discussion. I don't know where it will go, and in the House that's up to the Republican majority.
Right, right. Do you think that given spectrum and net neutrality, which is probably going to suck a lot of the oxygen out of the discussion, at least for the next 6 months or so, how high do you see privacy being on the list? I know that you can't speak for the majority, but...
Well, I'll try.
Go for it.
I think it's in the top five.
Okay.
But I think that net neutrality is obviously number one, although we'd love to skip that and get to spectrum. Make that number one. But I think spectrum is going to take a lot of time.
Right.
And it's very complicated, and there are budget implications, and we need to focus on that right away. So I see it in the top five, but I don't know. You know, I think it's going to be several months before we can talk about anything else if we go to spectrum.
Right. Okay. Brian?
In the Senate, I think there's great interest in looking at privacy legislation. We have not been as active on the issue as the House has. In some respects, we're catching up a little bit with how the issues have been teed up and discussed in the House. I think we learned a very important lesson when on the committee the issue of behavioral advertising was still quite front and center, when the members were very interested and felt like something probably needed to be done in that space. We began to do a lot of staff briefings. And I think what ended up happening is folks saw that business models are quite different. The information that people were asking for was different. It would be used for different purposes. In many cases, it was used to augment and enhance your user experience of particular websites. And so we found it really hard to hug it down to a one-size-fits-all approach. Mm-hmm. So apart from the desire of whether people should or shouldn't live under one particular regulatory regime, I think that we will probably have some of the same discussions once again in the privacy space about who's doing what, how do those business models compare, and how might they be impacted by things like opt-out and opt-in. I also think that as we've had some visits with industry folks, what we've found is there's some agreement that we want a baseline privacy standard that it's very difficult to design a website that has to comport itself with, you know, 40 or 50 different standards around the country. So there's some interest in looking at that issue. There's a lot of interest on the member side in how the information that's collected is going to be protected so that it's not subject to disclosure without consent from the consumer, in particular, that it wouldn't be used with third-party folks. But then you start to get into some more difficult areas about what can be collected, what can be asked for, how must it be presented to the consumer, where you might begin to see an otherwise very bipartisan issue start to show some differences in terms of how the members look at the proper role of government, as Roger said. So I think we're going to have a lot of those discussions. I know that Chairman Rockefeller and Chairman Kerry both and Chairman Pryor, for that matter, on the Consumer Subcommittee all have great interest in the area. So I expect the Senate will probably spend considerable time, but John can probably speak more to that.
Wow, I agree with Brian. No, but that, I think it will be. I think it isn't a partisan. It is not a partisan issue, and I think that members are interested. They all have their sort of unique interest in this, and I think, you know, this is very faceted debate. But as Brian indicated, you know, my boss, Chairman Rockefeller, Senator Kerry, Senator Pryor, have all expressed interest. So I think you'll see something that on that fairly early.
Okay. Great. And do you also agree, John, that there needs to be one regime, perhaps? Or
you know, I can only speak for Chairman Rockefeller. You know, these recent reports from the Federal Trade Commission, from the Department of Commerce, I think it sort of made the point to Chairman Rockefeller that, you know, self-regulation has largely failed, right? And that Americans need greater control over how their, you know, personal information is collected and used. And so I think that will sorely, you know, inform his debate on this.
Okay, great. And I want to make sure that we have time for questions, so I'll open that up in just a minute. But let's move to universal service reform, which has been on the agenda of the telecom world for years and years, of both the FCC and in Congress, and it just doesn't seem to ever move anywhere. Where do you see that, anyone? From any of you on, you know, will we see movement on this? Will we see some drafts percolating, perhaps?
Well, I think from Chairman Rockefeller's standpoint, we're going to first be looking to the FCC.
Okay.
And, you know, we expect the FCC to take up an item at their February agenda. They have a pending NPRM on the mobility fund. I think it's a very complicated issue for some rural areas. I'm thinking like in West Virginia, for example, the existing universal service regime has not particularly well served those areas. And I think, you know, one of Chairman Rockefeller's priorities will be seeing how we can not only use universal service funds for broadband, but to make the system work better in some of those unserved rural areas.
I guess I would say that, you know, to John's point, we are aware of, you know, the FCC's current thinking and activity on this. We were, I wouldn't say treated, but we were certainly given the opportunity recently to meet with the FCC Commission staff to find out where they are in looking at the issue. I think we were favorably impressed with the fact that the Commission is still looking. It's tempting to look at the low-hanging fruit, things that are really easy to tackle, and to leave some of the dicier issues, both on the contribution side but also on the distribution side, to the side, because there are not a lot of easy decisions, easy choices. You have a lot of providers in rural communities. Texas is 85% rural, who are paying a great deal of attention to how those reforms are going to go. So I think heartened to hear from the Commission that it is taking a very comprehensive look at this. We're going to continue those discussions. I don't know whether Chairman Rockefeller will want to have another hearing on the topic early in the session to keep a focus on it, but I think there are certain things that must be done, and we know what those are. And so we'll work with the Commission, and if the Commission finds that it's unable to act in particular areas or gives us clarification that it needs additional authority to do certain things, then that may be the basis for a fairly narrow piece of legislation, but I think it's a little too early to tell yet.
Okay. And Roger, Boucher was, you know, he was always a big proponent of doing something with USF to help districts like mm-hmm. his. You know, where else do you see Democrats pushing on this?
Well, I think I actually agree with Brian as well that what the FCC has going has a lot of interest from members, a bipartisan interest that they're headed in the right direction and doing some real good work there. I like Bruce Gottlieb's comment about comparing universal service to regulatory East Asian land war. It takes a really long time to get through it, and addressing interconnections got to be part of it. Mm-hmm. Intercarrier comp has got to be part of it. And so it's going to take a lot of work at the FCC. I think Congress should be in a supportive role there and then, if necessary, step in and make sure the FCC has the authority to do everything it can do. Mm-hmm. I do think Chairman Waxman comes from Los Angeles and has a different perspective than some of the rural districts, but he's always said we need to have a universal service that, you know, provides necessary broadband to rural America as well. But we have to make sure that we're ferreting out waste in the program. I'm not going to say fraud. I'm going to say waste, because there's a lot of duplicative spending that we could try to get rid of. And we need to, every year in the last 2 years at Energy and Commerce, there was a bipartisan information request to the FCC that we posted on our website, where we asked for the list of the top 10 recipients of universal service monies and the top 10, how many ETCs in each area. It's really interesting data that's available publicly, but we had it culled in a certain way. And it's surprising when you look at the size of the companies that are receiving hundreds of millions of dollars a year in subsidies. We need to dig into whether those subsidies are still necessary in all of those areas. We need to dig into whether duplicative subsidies for ETCs serving the same territory as a landline are necessary. And I know the FCC is really thinking hard about all of those issues.
Okay. And one last question for the three of you before we open it up for questions from the audience. So if you do have a question, if you could line up behind the microphone there so we can all hear you, that would be great. The National Broadband Plan. It'll be a year out in a couple of months. And I know that the FCC has made a lot of headway on some areas, but then, of course, the debate got shifted back to net neutrality, as always seems to happen. So is there going to be any role of Congress in oversight of the National Broadband Plan, do you see, or any potential, maybe not necessarily hearings, but, you know, requests for information to see where things stand on a lot of the outstanding issues and recommendations there? Anyone?
Well, I think, you know, for example, universal service and some mm-hmm. of those recommendations, I think we'll be tackling these sort of on an issue basis. And certainly, I mean, Chairman Rockefeller takes his oversight, aspect of the committee very seriously. One of the first things he did when he came into office was, came into the position as chairman, was to create an oversight and investigation team to look at certain things. But in terms of, I think, you know, we certainly do take oversight, or the chairman takes oversight of the agencies within the jurisdiction very seriously. I think that we will, I don't know if it's, we'll be having a universal service hearing. We may. It depends. You know, we'll be looking very closely at what the agency does on USF. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess I would just say two things. One, not to reignite our earlier discussion, but I think that on our side, our members are going to look on with interest as the commission moves forward with certain implementation to make sure that the agency colors inside the lines in terms of showing fidelity to its authorizing statute. I think that we are also interested, though, in hearing directly from the commission where it thinks it has certain challenges to authority to move forward with some of those things, what those are. Because I think that while there's not universal agreement to every recommendation in the broadband plan, there's certainly near consensus, as far as I can tell, on the notion that we need to continue to identify unserved first and then underserved areas, what those challenges are. And if the commission has workable proposals to move forward with that it can't because it lacks statutory authority, we're interested in hearing what those are. So on the one side, to make sure, keep it in the lane, we'll have some interest in, too, I think, on not just with the FCC on the broadband plan, but I think we do think it's useful to go back and take a look at what NTIA did through the Broadband Technical Opportunity Program. And I think the reason for that is twofold. One, obviously there was a challenge there at the end of the fiscal year where they were out of money mm-hmm. in terms of oversight. So we want to make sure that they have the resources necessary to keep eyes on those projects. And two, you know, one of our concerns very early in the process, hers, more to the point, was that we, in the name of stimulus, moved out aggressively to put grants out before we had completed mapping. Now states are starting to come in. The mapping information is getting better. We're going to have a better idea about what remains unserved. And we can start to ask some of the questions about why this area. And there are places in Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley, for example, that, you know, it may not be a lack of infrastructure, and that is the reason service is not robustly available. There may be other challenges involved. And so we will have interest in following up very closely on the commission and NTIA, if for no other reason to get better information about what those challenges to availability are, mm-hmm. so that we can work and partner with them.
Okay. And on that front, I mean, in going back and looking at where some of these grants have been sent, and then looking at the maps afterwards, well, the money's already been spent. So what do you do?
No, I think, you know, if we're going to take a look, whether it's future grant programs, tax incentives, I think there's value in taking a look at how the agency administered the program, what its selection criteria were, so that if we do it again, if there were mistakes made, and I think in our judgment we clearly believe that some were and have been made, we know for a fact grants went to areas that were overbuilding, not entirely, but there was certainly some replication. We want to make sure that we learn some lessons from that and how we can collect information better the next time, so that we can truly drive the resources to places that are unserved. So I think it's not so much from a question of do you reverse a grant award or that type of oversight, but I think there are valuable pieces of information that we can collect by examining that program a little bit more closely.
Okay. Roger, anything to add?
Mr. Waxman has been and always will be a big proponent of congressional oversight. As former chairman of the Oversight Committee, he thinks that congressional oversight is a core function, often as important as legislation. And whether you're in the majority or not, it's important to oversee federal agencies and the dollars they spend. On the broadband plan, I think we have a very good working relationship with the FCC, and I think that's more about policy implementation. Mm-hmm. So I think that's sort of light oversight. With regard to BTOP, we should conduct oversight, vigorous oversight of those grant dollars. He's confident that NTIA has done an excellent job in dispensing that money. They've been rigorous and careful, and some people think too careful. We think they're very cautious stewards of public dollars, but absolutely we should conduct oversight to see that nothing fell through the cracks and that, you know, everything's working as it should.
Okay. And questions from the audience? If you want to come up to the microphone here, that would be great. We'll get started. Matt, you want to start us off since you're standing?
And it's not a question, unfortunately, either, just a quick comment. So apologies for that and for challenging something Neil said after he's gone. But I think that while there's room for legitimate debate about the political realities around net neutrality, the statement about 95 members taking a pledge to support it and then losing is, in my recollection, a misstatement. Those are 95 challengers, not any members of Congress who are currently sitting, taking that pledge in a year when it was not exactly a favorable environment for Democratic challengers. And that pledge was issued on October 28th, the Thursday before the election. So, again, you know, there's room for legitimate discussion about the political realities here, but I think that that was greatly overstating the case and ascribing to that pledge some significance that it really didn't have.
Okay. Thanks. Anyone else have questions? Yes. Come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Kerry Hinton. I'm with the D.C. Public Service Commission. As I'm sure the members of the panel know, next month, NTIA and the FCC are going to be delivering the first national broadband availability map that's, of course, been composed, prepared by states collecting broadband data. The NTIA initially intended to collect data through the states, through the state grantees and their contractors, not only on availability but also on adoption. Due to objections from the industry, and I use that very broadly because there was individual companies, there was trade associations that went to NTIA. NTIA amended its request directions to the states to focus strictly on availability, not on adoption rates. To what extent do you think congressional members, representatives that you work for are ultimately going to be interested in collection of data on adoption rates, particularly given the fact that we've had such a long history of comparing the United States to other countries through OECD and through other types of international surveys, which have addressed not only availability but also adoption rates.
I guess I'll start off. I think, at least at the Energy and Commerce Committee, on the Democratic side, there's a lot of interest in adoption. Ms. Matsui had a bill on broadband lifeline that was focused on adoption. I think in the I haven't read the order yet, but I think in the Comcast NBC decision that came out today, I think there's some focus on adoption, trying to stimulate adoption. I think everybody agrees that adoption is good and we need to increase the rate. And in fact, if I remember correctly, at some of our NTIA hearings on BTOP, the Republicans were very upset that we weren't focusing more on adoption because we already have availability. And what we really should focus on is, you know, encouraging people to adopt. So I think you may even find bipartisan agreement that we need to focus on adoption a bit.
Yeah, and I will just add that Senator Rockefeller, along with Senator Hutchison, who was a co-sponsor of the Broadband Technology Opportunities, it's basically the Senate companion bill to the bill that Roger referenced that focuses on broadband adoption. So it is a very important issue.
Thanks. Any other questions? Okay, great.
Morgan Reed with ACT. I thought it was interesting that Neil pointed out the budgetary implications of spectrum. And to those of us who follow spectrum policy, we feel like we're fighting over real thin slices of the pie of the spectrum pie. Is there any interest in this next session in having at least hearings discussing the gigantic quantity of spectrum that currently lies fallow with several government agencies, and maybe coming up with some pricing to describe that as a budget asset that these government agencies hold as a way to encourage them to auction it off or make a good reason why it should be held unused, quote-unquote, in the public good?
Absolutely. And that is what I was referring to earlier when I mentioned that, in her judgment, the discussion has been too compressed. And we think that there's a lot of interest in, you know, I know that there are some who, for example, look at the 5 gigahertz band, and we know some of what is there, and it's going to cause some unease to start talking about, are there opportunities to accommodate other uses therein? There very well could be. Some really interesting uses in that area. So I think we clearly want to make sure we understand some of the challenges that come with talking about government spectrum use, but the fact is it has not been efficient, that there's ample opportunity to either move around or even to accommodate. It's entirely possible you might even find a spectrum band where there's a federal user that's not a great candidate for reallocation, but there's space within that band to do test beds where you might have an opportunity for entrepreneurs who don't have access to spectrum otherwise to nonetheless do a lot of testing in that band administered by NTIA or someone else. So I think we absolutely cannot have a meaningful conversation about spectrum policy unless you look at all uses across the available bands, and that clearly involves looking at government use and opportunities to move people around to free up additional spectrum.
I would agree with that. We would agree with that. I think the spectrum inventory bill that ended up not passing was designed to start that conversation, but in talking about finding 500 megahertz of spectrum for use by commercial entities and by other entities, we need to talk about everything. Everything has to be on the table.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, while there are mission-critical activities of government agencies like DOD and we need to protect those, I think that, you know, to the extent we're asking, a lot of this conversation is making commercial entities more, you know, spectrum efficient. We should also have that same conversation with our government spectrum holders.
Juliana.
Hi, Juliana Grunwald with National Journal. Can you guys comment on the Comcast NBCU approval today by the FCC and whether you see Congress reviewing the conditions that were imposed or, you know, doing anything on that in the wake of that?
Well, I mean, you know, I think on my way over here, I got the email that it had been, you know, approved. You know, I certainly think that, you know, from Chairman Rockefeller's perspective, you know, he wrote the FCC and expressed some concerns and outlined those. I think, you know, we'll be looking at those, the decision when it's finally released, carefully. And then we also think the FCC will have a needs to have some vigorous oversight of those conditions in that order as well.
Chairman Waxman also wrote to the commission expressing some support for certain conditions, and we'll be reviewing the order carefully. But it sounds, from all public reports, it sounds like the FCC was addressing a number of issues that Mr. Waxman was concerned about, but you also have to make sure there's vigorous oversight to make sure compliance is there. But we'll wait. We'll reserve judgment until we have an opportunity to read it. Maybe Terry and Craig have a copy with them here.
You know, I would have to concur. I mean, we have not had an opportunity to see it yet. The only thing I would point you to would be Senator Hutchison's comments at the hearing that we did have last year on the Comcast-NBC transaction. She did have some concerns that she expressed there. We'll see that whether those had been adequately addressed in the order. And she also expressed just a sort of macro view that the commission needs to confine any restrictions that it places on the merger to the underlying transaction itself, as opposed to going beyond the parameters of that deal. So we'll take a look and see the extent to which they did that, and probably have something to say about it then.
Okay. This may be a bit more of an abstract question, following up on Juliana's question, but do you see that a deal of this magnitude, it got so much attention on Capitol Hill, there's, you know, 30,000 comments filed at the FCC just last year. Do you see it raising any issues that for your bosses, you know, raise some red flags at some point or are kicking off points for certain issues, online video perhaps, and, you know, different kinds of revenue sharing models or access for minority programmers, things like that? Does that raise any issues that are, you know, big for any of your bosses that they might want to take up at some point?
Those are among the issues that Mr. Waxman identified in his letter to the FCC, so we'll be watching that space very carefully.
Okay, great. Great. Any other questions from the audience? No? Well, then I guess we can always go to cocktails a little early. Please thank our panelists for being here today on a busy day.